I think apart from the prestige, one of the attractions of going to Philippine Science High School was libre. You know, it was free, and you got a stipend. And so it was really my parents' choice. And you know, if you poll graduates of Philippine Science, I think many of them will tell you that their parents kind of pushed them to go there. And so I went to Philippine Science, and from St. Teresa's, where, you know, I was on top of the class, it was easy because, you know, I have a really good memory, and basically if you listen in class and remember the facts, you're fine. But then I had to go to Philippine Science, where I learned what torment is all about, because I had to put up a massive effort just to get the basics, while my classmates who were sleeping in class would get everything right. And so this only cemented my resolve. I said, well, obviously I'm not going to be a mathematician or a theoretical physicist. I really am going to be a writer. And I believe that in order to become a writer, you have to have something to write about, and there's nothing like torment. Okay. And so after high school, I started freelancing for magazines. And here's a depressing fact. I was freelancing during the late 80s to the early 90s, and they actually paid freelance writers more than freelance writers get paid now, which harks back to my earlier piece of advice, don't be a freelance writer. Okay, so on the other hand, college tuition was low at the UP, and I managed to put myself through college by writing articles for magazines, mostly profiles of movie starlets who would be the covers of women's magazines. And at the time, well, the kayabangan of youth, I used to read a lot of Rolling Stone magazine. So I would go and interview a starlet that I couldn't tell apart from the other starlets, but I would treat it like a Rolling Stone profile. And that's how I entertained myself. And I managed to, you know, save up for my tuition and so on, which wasn't a great effort because tuition at UP was very cheap. So in college, I had the good fortune to get accepted to the UP National Writers Workshop. It's still going on. I went when I was in my second year, and among the facilitators were Francisco Arceliana, wonderful guy, Jimmy Abad, the dad of Cian Abad, who teaches here. And I think it was Jimmy Abad who pointed out that my short stories read like movies. And he was right, because I feel that movies influenced my writing as much as books. Okay, and also present at that writing workshop was Butch Delisay. And I remember that. In UP, you have to pick your concentration around the second year. And so it was a toss-up between comparative literature and creative writing. And so I asked Butch Delisay, when I ran into him in the cafeteria, I said, which one should I pick? And he said, well, you already know how to write, so why don't you take comparative literature, which is essentially reading stuff. So I said, yes, okay. So I read a lot of books, and a lot of books in translation, and I can't say I finished college because I lack one PE. I've always hated PE, and one thing about me is that you can't make me do something I don't want to. I said, give me the consequences, I just don't want to. And so I lack one PE, and then when I hit 30, they said, oh, I know, you don't have to take PE because you're old. So you can just go to UP and apply for your diploma. And I said, nah, I think I like being an undergraduate. And one of the advantages of being an undergraduate is no one can force me to teach. Because, you know, I've always had the horror of teaching. I can teach short workshops, but teaching is such a huge responsibility that I feel should be left to people who are good at it. And, you know, also I have no patience, and, you know, the body count would be too high. Anyway, so after I left college, I supported myself again by doing freelance work. And my expenses had gone up because I decided to move out of my parents' home. Because one of the first things I learned about writing was that in order to write, I have to be alone. I'm sure a lot of people can write, you know, in the middle of a crowd or while having very active social lives. But I've never really been a sociable person, and it's really like being alone. And I think this is a plus if you want to write fiction, because essentially you're having a conversation with yourself. Now, Filipino society is suspicious of people who want to be alone. As in, I like to go to the mall, and right there, you know, I'll have lunch, and then I'll stick around with my coffee and scribble in my notebook. And you will not believe the number of people who have come up to me and said, "Mag-isa ka." And I say, "Opo, hinihintay mo kaibigan mo? Hindi po. Gusto mo samahan kita." As in, they cannot conceive of anyone who wants to be alone. And yet, if you want to listen to the voices in your head, which are hopefully not schizophrenia, you really should like your solitude, okay? And so I could not be alone in a house with my parents, and my sister was growing up then, and so I decided that I would go and get my own apartment, which became a subject of one of the short stories in my book, which I hope you will read, which I hope you will buy, because working writer, okay? And so apart from writing feature articles, I found out that public relations agencies will pay freelance writers to write press releases. And this is the way it works. Like, Procter & Gamble releases a new shampoo, and then the PR agent hires you to write 10 different versions of the same press release. It was, you know, it was soul-crushing work, but, you know, it paid very well, and it paid the bills. Anyway, in 1991, it was in 1991. I've always believed that the apocalypse is coming. This is what comes from reading Revelations as a child. Because, you know, apart from the Reader's Digest condensed books, we had, you know, the Bible at home. And the Old Testament is great, you know, it's full of smiting and violence, but the New Testament is kind of advice, women be like this, women be like that. So I skipped most of it and went straight to Revelations. And so, yeah, and so I'm half expecting the apocalypse to happen. And 1991 was an especially, 1990 and 91 was an especially apocalyptic time, because you had the first Iraq war massing, and then you had the eruption of Mount Pinatubo. So we would have ash fall every morning, you know, a thick layer in the garage. And also there was that cataclysmic earthquake in Baguio, which killed thousands of people. And so I was sitting in my rented apartment thinking, the world is going to end. I have a lot of stuff to write. So I sat down and wrote a story, and being in my early 20s and mayabang, I said, I will send this to the magazine where all my favorite writers were published. I will send it to the New Yorker. Okay. So I sent it to the New Yorker. And because this was the early 90s, they still had the courtesy to return your manuscript along with a form that said, "We are sorry, we cannot use this material at this time." So I was looking at it, you know, at my story and, you know, my crushed dreams of being in the New Yorker. And at the same time, you know, does anybody remember broadsheets, newspapers on paper? And it said, "Deadline for the Palaka Awards." And I thought, well, you know, what am I going to do with this? I only have to photocopy four sheets and, you know, submit the forms. So I went and submitted it to the Palaka Awards, and it won. And it won because I lucked out. The head of the jury that year was Adrian Cristobal. Adrian Cristobal, not one of the really serious literary types, but someone who is, you know, just wrote a lot. And I remember his comment about it was, you know, this story grabs you by the neck, which has basically been my rule, as in the first sentence should grab the reader. Because, you know, what's to stop the reader from turning the page? So the first paragraph has to stop them from turning the page, right? And so, because I had won a Palanca Award, I met Karina Polasco, who is still my publisher. I followed her here. And she published my first book, Manananggal Terrorizes Manila. And then, to my horror, being a published short story writer doesn't mean that that's going to be your living. Nope. So I continued to freelance, and then I wrote a column in a broadsheet called Today. And Abe Florendo, who died a few years ago, hired me to write a column in the lifestyle section. I said, what will I write about? He said, whatever you want. So I ended up writing mostly, it became kind of a proto-blog because I was writing about myself, what I ate, what I watched, what gigs I went to. And it was called Twisted, and it became quite popular. And I was consciously addressing the smarter readers by employing irony. I would be saying one thing, but if you were a smart reader, if you were used to reading, you would know that I meant the opposite. And so it was kind of a Rorschach test for the reader. If they got what I was saying, great, you know, we can talk. And if they didn't get what I was saying, well, I cannot help you there. One example of how irony is, some people really are irony challenged. There was this truly, truly terrible Baguio writer whose book I discovered. Abeto Campo gave me a copy of the book. It was called The Fireless Inferno. It was terrible. And it was so terrible that even if we all tried to write a book, we could not be that terrible, okay? So I wrote a column where I kind of overdid the irony thing. I said, this is the Gabriel Garcia Marquez of our time. This guy, watch him. He's going to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. And he believed it. and he wrote to me, thanking me. And that's when I learned that irony has a downside, because I may have enabled him to write more books. And then, seriously, recently, a few years ago, I Googled him, and he had been declined when he tried to join several religious orders. He was declined at every one. Not a big surprise. And finally, he was the dean of some nursing school, and he was being charged with sexual abuse of his students. So this is what a bad review can do to you. Anyway, so I should change this. Okay, we were talking about the complete and utter hell of writing for a living. And now we get to the soul-crushing horror of semi-fame. I call my condition semi-fame because I have traveled with people who were truly famous. I went to the States with the E-Heads, the Eraserheads, and they were so famous that everywhere we went, I could feel my ears bleeding because all I could hear was screams, really. As in, it sounded like this. That was all I could hear.